Stephen, thank you so much for coming on. It's an absolute pleasure and a dream.
Is it a dream?
No, it is, seriously, because, you know, I've grown up with your comedy.
You've grown up with my comedy? Jesus, that makes me feel old.
Well, I'm 28, and The Office has been going, what, 10 years?
The Office was 10 years ago, you're right.
So, around about my sort of teens, when I was leaving school and wondering what I was going to go and do with myself, your comedy was kind of at the forefront, and I've grown up with it, really.
God, I'm part of the establishment.
You
are. I used to think I was rock and roll. I thought I was one of the new kids.
You've done so well, though, haven't you, in that 10 years? I mean, obviously, you worked... Well,
Thank you, but
you've worked hard before that to get to the point of where you are now. But, of course, during the time when you kind of... It all kicked off for you with The Office, you've had a real extensive career.
Well, my ambition from a young age was to be involved with comedy. So I sort of... I was always swimming in that direction, you know. And, I worked very hard. You know, when I first... when I was at university, I was doing radio. I was taking shows up to the Edinburgh Festival. I did stand-up comedy when I first left university, on and off for a few years. Then I met Ricky and we got writing, and I've always been sort of, you know, I suppose quite determined.
And it was comedy that you first started doing, wasn't it? Along with things like mobile DJing, is that right?
Yeah, I was a mobile DJ when I was at school, and in my sort of late teens, my friend Andy, who was a bit more technical-minded than me, built an entire DJ set up, and we used to occasionally do, you know, sort of scout jamborees and weddings and things like that. I mean, I wouldn't have hired us. We were the equipment, I mean, good old Andy, but it was pretty shoddy, and I couldn't afford to buy records because I was only at school, so I used to tape everything off the radio, and then I'd play that at the disco, and I'd have to try and fade out before the DJ came in and announced what it was.
Which is probably Brunet Brooks at the time.
Probably Brooksy or someone like that, yeah. So, yeah, we were not a high-class proposition.
And how was the stand-up comedy for you then? Because I understand that it was kind of hit or miss, wasn't it, when you used to go into different pubs?
Well, the first gig I ever did, I only did 5 minutes in Bristol. My parents dropped me off, but I wouldn't let them come in to see the gig. It was a bit like, you know, a teenager getting their kids to drop them off, you know, down the road from the school disco. And it went well, that first gig, and then, I sort of did it on and off, and I think I was quite good. I was in some competitions, you know, people used to be very complimentary, but it was more that the audience either loved it or hated it, really, because it was quite sort of odd, that act. And although I did it on and off for about 5 years, I never really felt totally comfortable at home on stage.
How did that change for you? Has it changed since you've become famous?
Well, I quit the stand-up thing once the TV stuff took off. It just seemed much easier to not do it, basically. And then the last couple of years, I got the bug again. It's quite addictive, stand-up, because it's, you know, always thinking, how can you improve it? You know, why didn't that joke work? What do I have to do to change it? And so I started dabbling again, just 5 and 10 minutes here and there in little sort of comedy clubs. And before I knew it, I sort of had a whole act, really, and that was why I sort of went back out on the road and started doing this stand-up tour.
Okay, well, let's talk about that, because you're at the Civic Hall in Wolverhampton this Saturday. You're also coming back on the 26th of November. This is a pretty extensive tour, though. I mean, obviously, you did it years and years ago, but through all the stuff that you've done that we know and love you for, to now put a tour together which is like your first big one, that we all know who you are and what you do.
Yes.
I looked online last night. You're pretty much working most nights, as well as having your Life's Too Short program coming out soon.
It's been a nightmare year. It's crazy. I got too much work going on. I did not get into show business for this level of work. I got into show business for I got into show business for sex, drugs, and rock and roll. I'm not saying any of it. All I'm saying is the inside of hotel rooms and occasionally a Nando's. You know, the show, I think I'm putting effort into the show. I'm trying to deliver every night, but the rest of the day is me cursing, thinking, what the hell have I done with my life?
So, have you got people around you when you're... Because I know, you know, at the moment you're in Derbyshire. So, presumably you're in your hotel room or something. But have you got people around you, or is it quite a lonely business?
Have I got people around me? What, like a giant entourage?
Well, yeah, because you're Stephen Merchant, so you can kind of invite people to join you, surely, can't you?
But I'm too cheap for that. I've got a guy who's my tour manager who comes with me, and I've got various people who do support, you know, the support acts. So, it's not desperately lonely. It's just not as glamorous as I thought it would be, you know? I just thought I'd be in a jacuzzi every night with sort of Playboy bunnies, and I don't know where that's gone wrong. I don't understand it. I'm fundamentally not rock and roll, you know? So in my core, I'm not the sort of guy who goes out boozing every night, you know? And So I'm in bed with a cup of Ovaltine. It's just not cool.
Okay, now I've been trying to work out your, because every comedian has a sort of a bit of music they come onto at the start. I'm sure you're the same. I'm coming to see you on Saturday, but I've been trying to work out what it might be.
Right.
I think I've got it.
Okay.
Do you mind if I play it to you?
Sure.
Okay, so this is how it's going to work on Saturday, I think, in my mind. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage, Stephen Merchant. I know you're a bit of a Stevie Wonder fan, and obviously you're a tall bloke, higher ground. Is that anything like...
You're not far off. Stevie gets played in the sort of interval music.
Right.
But he doesn't bring me onto the stage.
Right.
You've let yourself down there. Well, the song that actually brings me onto the stage is...
Gloria Estefan.
It's Boom Shake the Room by DJ Jazzy Jeff.
Oh, yes. What a tune.
Yeah, great tune. So that is what people can expect.
Fantastic. So do you have a little say, then, in the interval music as well?
Of course I do. I mean, man like me used to run a mobile disco. Basically, what I've done is I've made a compilation of all the songs I've taped off the radio.
Mixtape.
And, I play that in the interval, yeah.
Oh, I actually look forward to that now as well. When I'm having a half-time pint.
Exactly.
Do you know what? I was actually going to start the interview today. It's gone a little bit pear-shaped, I will be honest.
Right.
Because I was going to start the interview today because I was working out, you know, you're world-renowned there with all your Hollywood stuff and...
Thanks.
And I was thinking a lot of the interviews you do probably aren't on the phone.
Right.
Because you do a lot of sort of, you know, Graham Norton and Alan Carr and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
And I was also thinking that you don't know who I am. And most people that probably interview you know who they are. So you kind of have an expectation of questions they're going to ask. But I thought as a bit of an icebreaker, we've kind of done that now, but as a bit of an icebreaker...
You're not here in Derby, are you? You're not about to knock on the door and come in this hotel room, are you?
No.
God.
No, I'm not Noel's house party, NTV, or anything like that.
I have put some trousers on.
No, I was just thinking, we do actually have a couple of things in common.
Right.
The first thing is we're both from the South West, because I know obviously you're from Bristol.
Yes.
People only need to talk to you to realise that. Hopefully I might have hidden that a little bit.
What do you mean, hopefully? I'm proud of my accent.
Well, no, I am proud, but my dad used to say, look, James, if you want to get a job on the radio, you're going to have to lose your accent.
He's right there. I tried to lose my accent. I couldn't get rid of it. That's why I'm not on the radio.
But hang on a second. Look at the gigs you've had on the radio.
Well, true.
National. True. National. Me, regional.
That's the thing, see. Yeah, but the thing is, people like it on the BBC, they like regional accents now. So if you hadn't lost your accent, you'd probably be on Radio 1.
Oh, yeah. I'm from a little place called Froome in Somerset. Do you know?
Yes, I know Froome, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And the second thing was, we have actually worked at the same place. You won't remember this, because there was many people that worked there, and I was one of those many.
Right.
At Six Music.
Ah, yes.
I used to sit outside the controller's office, and I remember, you probably don't remember this, but once you wanted to go and see Sir Paul McCartney, you was doing Electric Proms.
Right.
And I sorted your tickets out for you.
Oh, did you? Well, that's very sweet of you. Thank you very much.
Well, I just thought I'd drop that in there, because it's a bit of an icebreaker, and it sort of hopefully gets you to know me a bit better as well.
You're not going to ask me for money, are you?
No.
Okay, good.
Was it a good gig?
It was a great gig. Yeah, that was a great gig. That was a very small, intimate venue, and I actually got to meet Sir Paul after that.
Did you? Did
he? Shook his hand.
Is that you wanted to meet him, he wants to meet you, or...?
Maybe a little from column A, a little from column B, you know? I don't know. I'm not sure if... I don't think he had any idea who he was. Although, I have to say, I did see him subsequently at some event in America, and I sort of shook his hand as though he would remember me, and he had no idea who I was. But why would he?
Now, let's just go back to your tour. It's called Hello Ladies.
Mm.
Is that a kind of... Hey, ladies, look at me.
When I first was talking about the show in interviews and stuff, I did say that it was going to be me trying to find a wife. And then I started getting some quite weird letters from people, sort of women who'd sent photographs and kind of love CVs that said things like, you know, I was in a relationship between 1992 and 96, but it didn't work out. Now I live on my own with cats, and I call me. And it all got a little bit creepy. So I'm not searching for a wife. I'm talking about my failure to find a wife over the years, and lots of stories of sort of romantic misfortune, but also other stuff as well. If you're not interested in my love life, then don't worry, there's other laughs as well.
G-S-O-H.
Exactly.
Okay, now I've had a few people on Facebook and Twitter message me.
Right.
And I've just picked three at random that I said I'd ask you these questions, if you don't mind.
Sure.
David Evans says, is Sean Williamson your assistant in real life?
Sean Williamson is not my assistant in real life, although in our new show Life's Too Short, which you mentioned, which is this new sitcom I've done with Ricky, it starts very soon, actually. It starts November 10th. And in that show, Ricky and I do appear as ourselves periodically, and we have this big flash London office, and Sean Williamson in the show does reappear as our assistant.
Fantastic.
So he's not far off.
I love the fact that you call him Barry, and Ricky calls him Sean. Does that still happen?
I never make the mistake in real life, although I'm pretty certain our producer Charlie has on occasion called him Barry.
Lee Wagner says, why do obviously brown-haired people get afflicted with ginger beards? Is that God just taking the mick?
Well, I wouldn't say my hair was brown. I was very blonde as a kid. I think it's got slightly darker, but I would say I was more sort of ratty blonde. I don't know why the ginger beard has emerged. I mean, I've grown to like it. I think the beard gives me a certain maturity. It makes me look like, an adult. If I shave it off, I look a bit like an overgrown student. But, I don't know why it's ginger. I'm just looking at it in the mirror now.
Have you got a beard now, then?
I've got a beard now. It's getting a bit grey, actually.
Okay.
Oh, God.
Becky Sully says, what were your first impressions of Ricky Gervais when he employed you to be his assistant at XFM? Because obviously he's known for sellotaping members of staff up and doing stuff for his own personal amusement.
Well, I remember getting called for an interview and I was charmed by him. He was very funny and good-natured and we had a good laugh. Actually, I told him about my love of Stevie Wonder. I remember we talked about Stevie. But very quickly I realised when I started working with him that he was probably going to get both of us fired. Because he really didn't do any work, and he didn't really know what he was doing. And so much as I liked him personally, I thought he was probably incompetent at his job, which we were working at the radio. So I actually quit and joined the BBC, which was a sensible move.
What were you doing there?
I did a sort of traineeship at the BBC that lasted on and off for a couple of years. But during that time, I was able to make a little sort of demo of what became The Office with Ricky. So actually, it all worked out fine. But he was a good guy to work with, but he wasn't a great boss.
I just want to sort of take people into the mind of you, because I think there'd be a lot of sort of budding people or the people that admire your work. How does it work for you with sort of writing and ideas? Do you come up with stuff on the move, just write it down on a phone, or do you spend an actual day just sat down at a computer with nothing on, just silence, writing? How does it work for you?
When you say nothing on, you mean naked?
No, well, you might be naked, just in your pants. I meant musically, because some people like to have, like, the radio
on
in the
background.
Oh, no,
I can't have music on. It has to be silence if I'm writing, yeah. It's a combination of all those things, really. Yeah, sometimes it's making notes on the hoof. Sometimes it's staring at a computer screen for ages, just trying to squeeze ideas out of your brain. Sometimes it's, if it's stand-up, live on stage, something occurs to you, and you go down that road and see if it works. When it's working with Ricky, then we're sat in an office together, throwing ideas around. All kinds of different ways, really. It's hard work, writing. It's anyone who thinks it's easy and it's an easy life, it's difficult. There's lots of frustration, lots of going down sort of avenues that don't lead anywhere. And people think, I think often that our lives are very glamorous, that it's award dues and trips to LA, but a lot of it is just sat in an office, in North London, just battering away, trying to get these scripts made, and it's quite hard work.
And I can't believe we've gone 15 minutes without talking about Carl Pilkington, but we should bring him into this. When you kind of decide to have that sort of, because you've got a great writing team there together, you obviously get on so well, which generates some brilliant ideas. So is Carl part of that? When you get together, is it like, right, three of us in a room, let's get some drinks, let's chat?
We never write anything with Carl. Anything we do, if it's for radio or podcasts or animation, anything like that, that's all made up as we go along. We might briefly talk about what we're going to talk about, as it were, but then we open the microphone and we just start gabbling away. We don't write anything for An Idiot Abroad. The producers and Ricky and I plan stuff behind Carl's back and spring it on him when he's out. He thinks he's swimming with dolphins. It turns out he's swimming with sharks. That sort of, those hijinks.
That was brilliant. That was absolutely brilliant.
Exactly. But nothing is sort of scripted with Carl. He gets very frustrated because he thinks, he's heard rumours that people seem to think that he's an actor called Graham and that we write all his lines for him. But, he's his own unique genius.
Now, you might be able to trump this with one of the best kind of facts of the stuff that you've done. I'm talking about the TV programmes like Extras and The Office. Isn't your dad in one of the episodes?
My father is in The Office. He pops up as a sort of caretaker character. He never says anything and he just occasionally stares at the camera, sort of dumbfounded, like a rabbit in the headlights. He is in that. I don't think he's in Extras, but he does pop up in our film Cemetery Junction. He's in that in a very similar role, staring at the camera. He pops up on occasion. He sometimes gets recognised in Bristol for those appearances, and he'll say to me on the phone, "Oh, I got noticed today, Stephen." He'll pretend like he hates it, but of course he loves it.
Yeah, he's got his own Twitter account secretly.
Exactly.
All right, Stephen, listen, I won't keep you because, like you say, you've got loads of other people to talk to. I'm just so grateful I could have 20 minutes of your time. You're going to be at the Civic Hall this Saturday, the 5th of November and the 26th of November, and I look forward to seeing you then.
Thank you, sir.
Cheers, Stephen.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.